Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days.
I mean,
days
I feel like the waterfall of thoughts. And every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala New York Podcast.
And I'm Dave, your host. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Returning to the podcast today, you know her, you love her, Dr. Shante Smalls. This was a talk she gave a few weeks ago at our weekly Dharma gathering, and the topic of the talk is retreat, meditation retreats. What are they all about? What happens at a meditation retreat? What's the point of attending a meditation retreat, whether it's a day, a weekend, a week, a month? So this is a fascinating talk, and coincidentally, it happens to tie into the fact that the Shambhala Meditation Center of New York is putting on a retreat. It's happening the week of February 2nd. It's the Meditation in the City retreat. In the style of the Meditation in the City podcast that you know and you love, this retreat is a week-long retreat, again, beginning the evening of February 2nd. It's being led by David Perrin, another contributor to the podcast, and it is an opportunity to attend a meditation retreat right here in New York City. If you can do the whole week, that's great. But if you can't do the whole week, if you can't get off that many days at work, then you can do by the day, you can do the first weekend, whatever works for your schedule. The retreat includes guided meditation, Dharma talks, and the chance to relate to your fellow retreatants as a community. For more information and to register, go to ny.shambhala.org and click the link on the homepage for Meditation in the City Retreat. And now, speaking of retreat, Dr. Shante Smalls. Shante, what was the name of this talk?
Retreat Yourself. Anyone watch Parks and Recreation? Or okay. So... there was this television show called Parks and Recreation that would come on after 30 Rock Thursday nights. And these two television shows got me through graduate school, I feel like, because they were so funny. And there's a, like, I don't know, like in the third or so season, two of the characters, Tom and Donna, have this annual day called Treat Yourself, where they just buy outrageous things like cashmere socks and like, and they're like, treat yourself, you know, diamond necklace, treat yourself. So there's like the, it's like so funny. They just buy the most ridiculous things, and they, it's called a treat yourself day. So I was thinking about meditation retreats, and how, and this kind of idea that, you know, self-care or treating ourselves is like a spa day or sleeping in. All those things are great, you know. I mean, believe me, chocolates or whatever, you know, like I'm going to watch, you know, 10 billion shows on Netflix or all that's like really amazing stuff. But I was thinking about, you know, it's the end of the year and it's hibernation season here in this part of the world, at least. And this is a time when a lot of people in Shambhala and other traditions go on retreat. Traditionally, this is a time of retreat. This, you know, sort of the winter leading up to the spring is a retreat time, as well as summertime is. Has anyone here ever been on retreat, whether a day long or weekend or a week or month long? Okay. Who wants to say something about going on retreat? Just whatever comes to your mind. You can. I'll repeat it. Just shout it out. What? A lot of alcohol? What kind of retreat you go to? The weekend retreats. Where? Oh, people. Oh, okay. So yeah, this is not that This is not that kind of retreat, yes, but there's some people go to like on vacation, they'll like, yeah, so this is the opposite of that a little bit. Although in Shambhala we do celebrate at the end, but it's not. There's definitely not a lot of alcohol. But yeah, so there's a kind of conventional retreat where it's like I need a getaway weekend, and so I'm gonna get on. I'm gonna go with my girls and my boys and my girls and my boys, and we're gonna go to Miami, and you know, we're gonna go skiing, and we're gonna go wherever, and we're gonna party, and that's gonna help me deal with life. Or get away from it all. Anyone who's been on a different kind of retreat? It's amazing, yes. Who's been, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely like focus, I would say.
Your experience has been, it's been a focus. How long have you gone on retreat for?
The longest retreat I've done is a week.
A week, okay, great.
I've done some trainings that were
for okay. Stuff comes up. Okay, great. Great. So, right. There are really three aspects to retreat. Preparing for retreat, retreating, and leaving, or post-retreat. I mean, first, maybe there's a pre-step. There's like a commitment to go on a retreat. Why would you do that? Like, ew, you know? And you can do, you know, a half day. We do that almost every week here. The public sitting is 3 hours. That's basically what they call a half nintun or a day. A nintun is a day. And we do a lot of weekend retreats here, trainings, weekend trainings. And that's a lot of people's introduction. That was really my introduction to going on a retreat in this tradition, was doing these weekend trainings, Friday night talk, all day Saturday, all day Sunday, and it was very intense. And the preparation really, in some ways, is there's kind of nowhere to be prepared. I mean, once you have been on retreat a number of times, you sort of know the drill is that you're often I'll have this idea that I'm going to like clear all this space and like enter the retreat in this, you know, with a lot, but usually it's like I'm kind of sliding like into like head first, you know, like emailing to the last second. And bringing my life with me to the last moment. And then, you know, whether it's here or elsewhere, I've done retreats in a lot of, you know, different places. There's something that happens whether you're doing a retreat in the city where you live, or even I do sometimes retreats in my house for 3 or 4 or 5 days. And solitary retreats. And there's a kind of something that does happen, and it's, and people say to me sometimes, oh, you go on retreat, that's so amazing. It must be like so relaxing. I'm like, well, going on a retreat is less like a spa and it's more like boot camp. Because of this quality of, it's sort of like at first you're sort of there and you're, maybe you know some people or maybe you don't, and you're like, what have I done? And maybe it's a place far away. Maybe you go to Karma Choling in Vermont, or you go to Shambhala Mountain Center in the hinterlands of Colorado or wherever. I've gone to Gampo Abbey, which is at the top of the world in Nova Scotia, and it's really, there's nowhere to go. The nearest town is like a mile and a half away, and there are like 100 people there, you know? So it's like, oh, I should have just stayed at the monastery. But you get there and it's kind of like you just, you know, all of life is, you know, work. Everything that you want to get away from is still right there. And you realize, oh, what have I done? You know, it's like oatmeal every day and I hate this person who I don't know who's sitting in front of me, and it's cold and it's hot. I'm not in my bed. I'm in a tent maybe. And there's a kind of settling. And a lot of discomfort. Maybe it's discomfort is very outer, right? It has to do with things aren't being the way, you know, I have things very much like I like them in my house. And when I go on retreat, I always end up in a dorm or in whatever with snorers. Always. And I'm like, you can't choke people to death. That's not... And there's a schedule. Usually beginning at 7. When I went to Gampo Abbey, it was again at 5:30 in the morning. I was like, oh, no. But so there's this schedule, and your time is not your own. So you begin to, you're not in your own environment. The schedule is someone else has made it. And there's a kind of discipline, a form that helps you to shake up your own habits, your habitual patterns. You don't have your coffee just as you like it. You know, you don't go to your coffee shop where they know your name. Maybe you can't have that cigarette exactly when you want it. Or text, or whatever. And there's a way then that you begin to work with the hours you're just sitting on the cushion or walking around like a zombie. And maybe there's silence or contemplative meals. And what begins to happen is that one realizes that, oh, this is an experience of being with myself with other people. And I'm in community, even if we're, you know, sitting in silence for hours and hours and hours. And how do I work with this feeling of feeling naked and vulnerable because the meals are pretty simple and the schedule is pretty simple and it's the same every day, pretty much. And the accommodations are simple. And you're usually somewhere, you know, in the woods somewhere. And no matter how long the retreat is, whether it's a day or a weekend or a week or a month, it's always the same rhythm. It's like trepidation or excitement in the beginning, wanting to peel your eyes out with a spoon in the middle, and then a kind of feeling of exhilaration or loss at the end, coming together, right? Something has happened just by really sitting and working with being with your mind and your body and working with the elements of the temperature being not right and being still or having to wash breakfast dishes. So this summer I went on a retreat, and there are all kinds of retreats. And this retreat was kind of short. And it was only 5 practice days, and it was a retreat that has to do with being given entry to the teachings by Sakyong Nyipa Rinpoche, sort of the highest teachings in Shambhala, the entering that path. And there were, you know, a couple hundred participants in Tatamagouche, Nova Scotia. It was about an hour north of Halifax. And I had been to this retreat center before, and it's very basic, like in all senses of the word. And there are lots of opportunities to work with discomfort. There are very big mosquitoes, there are terrifying spiders, the food was horrific, there were porta potties. The first day, one part of the camp, they ran out of hot water day one, and we were like, we have hot water. So there were lots of opportunities to work with discomfort. And all of us there were advanced practitioners, so we'd been to a lot of retreat, and yet still, there's all kinds of things that come up. Emotional, psychological, physical discomfort. So why would someone do this? Because part of the like sitting here and, you know, for 20 or so minutes and we're experiencing whatever we're experiencing, boredom, sleepiness, irritation, happiness, hunger, physical pain. There's a way that learning to work with that and becoming familiar with one's own patterns of mind and one's own habits and when the ways that we have, little sneaky ways we have of tricking ourselves out of being present, there comes a time when you are just really curious about and committed to working with that. So much so that you voluntarily go into the, you know, woods and do it. And that you understand and you have experienced it being beneficial. And, you know, also it's very joyful. I mean, there, you know, people I get to see every summer and retreat and we get to catch up and it's really nice. And, you know, time is really different in retreat too. Because when you slow down, time expands. And so the days are like really luscious and really kind of long. And you're like, wait, I've only been gone 5 days, you know? But there's a sense of expansion and settling and getting familiar with yourself. It's like going on a really good, weird date. You know, like when you go on a date or you've been on a date with someone and you're like, you just want it to continue, even if there's, you don't quite know what's going on. And you're like, there's something about this that's really inviting, even though it's a little hard and scary. So I just want to read a little portion from the Sakyong's previous book. He has a new book out on conversation, but this book is called The Shambhala Principle, Discovering Humanity's Hidden Treasure. And this was this is one of my favorite books of his. I really love this book. And this portion is talking about creating enlightened society and kind of the instructions. And that's also part of retreat, is because in retreat, you know, you're like, the participants are like doing the dishes and clean the toilets, and you're kind of, everyone's kind of equal, and you're like, you're helping to make things happen. But he says, humanity is constantly experiencing its core openness through thoughts of curiosity, love, understanding, and even sadness or pain. Because we are alive, these deep-seated feelings are always bubbling up, connecting us to the world through our senses. By focusing the mind and feeling the heart, we increase our ability to connect with goodness. So we take a moment to gather our senses into our heart and feel what it means to be worthy. That ignites confidence, the spark of awakened energy. Our life is illuminated by this healthy glow. So there's a way in which making a commitment to myself to take the space to really get to know myself in community with other people and to get to know other people is a real act of working with these deep-seated feelings that bubble up. It's like committed, concerted time. And I always leave feeling like, I want more, which is interesting because I never want to go. And I've probably spent, I've been practicing Shambhala for almost 12 years. I probably spent a year in retreat total. And it doesn't feel like enough, interestingly. But, you know, this is a householder tradition. We're lay people. We're not monastics. If you want to be monastic, you can certainly do that. When I went to Gampo Abbey, because I had some idea in my mind that, oh, maybe I'll become a monastic and just, like, get away from it all. And then I saw how hard they work. Like, it's, that's real work, actually. And I was like, no, I don't. Nope. No, I don't, you know, not interested. But for me, every time I leave, what I feel is a sense of incredible strength and incredible energy. Incredibly energized to get to know myself better. A deeper commitment to wakefulness of myself and others. And it's a lot of fun. It always ends with dance parties. If I'm there, usually I'm one of the DJs, spinning inappropriate music, and people are looking at me, you know. But many of us singing along, having a good time. And there's a sense of connection and possibility, and like hopefulness in the sense of, oh, because there's intelligence and wakefulness and dignity and basic goodness in me and everything, when we come together and practice together, that's multiplied. You know, like the difference between you practice at home and then when you come and practice with other people, and there's a, you kind of feel a little, does anyone have that experience where you feel a little buoyed or strengthened? Or like it's, it feels like it helps you? Like maybe you haven't practiced for a while and you come here and it's like, oh, okay, now I can practice. Well, it's like superfood when you go on retreat. And it doesn't have to be for a month. It can be a day. It can be a half a day. It can be an hour. And then we come back into the world. We don't stay in retreat, you know. We ease back into the world, and they always say, okay, be careful when you come back. Like, I always burn food when I come back because you're a little like, oh, where am I, you know. And there's a sense of reintegration and a sense of I'm able to be in the world a little bit more kindly and a little bit more confidently. It's not like I'm floating above people. It's actually I'm more in the world. I'm more committed to being connected to other people. It gets simpler in that way. It's not about separation. You know, so we're having a retreat here in February. And it's called a week tune. And you don't, it's a week-long meditation retreat called Meditation in the City, like the podcast. You know, and I invite you to think about coming for a day or a weekend. My good friend David Perrin is leading it, and he's just such a good, solid, smart, funny, amazing human being and teacher. And there'll be some of us advanced students in another room doing some practice requirements, so we'll also be here, and we'll come together sometimes for talks. But think about it. If you've never done anything like that, think about just trying to come meditate from 9 to 6. Ah, scary. But think about that, like on a Saturday or a Sunday. In the dead of winter, the cruelest month, February, right? You come into this nice warm room. And deepen your practice and see what that feels like. Or don't. We have one in August. If you feel like you're not ready for the winter one, we have one in August. And I want to do something a little bit different tonight, which is instead of taking a whole lot of Q&A, I want us to maybe just sort of talk to each other and then kind of continue the conversation over food, to have it be a little bit more celebratory since it's the end of the year. But I thought I'd just take one question and then please feel free to grab me. We can, you know, you can stay in the room and we can talk, or you can go out in the, what did you call it before, Susie? The antechamber. The antechamber. I was like, the boudoir? No, that's the wrong. You can go in the antechamber. So one question you have.
I'm curious about how you structure, how you'd go about structuring an at-home retreat.
Oh,
because, you know, doing the retreats here, the weekend retreats, going up to Carmen Choling, it's like you have permission to turn off your phone.
Yeah.
You don't have your video games. You don't have a partner.
Yeah.
And like...
Yeah.
I'm on vacation right now and I've tried doing stuff and like extending my practice, but then it...
Right. Well, if you have a partner or a family, it's good to ask permission, right? And have a conversation and not to be like, I'm a meditator and I need to do this. But to kind of, you know, to be like a human being and be like, can I go for a day or whatever? I live alone. I live with two dogs, so I can do whatever I want. And it's not necessarily something I would suggest you do if you've been on retreat. Yeah. I structure my day like a retreat day. So it starts at 7, ends at 5 or 6. I do the whole thing. I do opening chants. I take my dogs out on a contemplative walk so we don't meet up with any of our friends and run around the dog park. You know, we kind of stay in the woods, and I keep the meals very simple. I keep my phone off, and, you know, I put a away message on, and I might like watch TV or something at the end of the night, but usually I just fall asleep because it's so tiring, actually. But I structure it like a retreat. I do have a work period, you know. And it's very interesting because I'm in the world. I live in New York City. Yeah, you know the neighborhood I live in. It's very busy. It's very populous. So it's not like I don't take the laundry or if that has to happen, but it's with a little bit more awareness and mindfulness of my situation. And what happens is that things become very functional. So my conversation becomes functional rather than superfluous, you know, superfluous. And my energy kind of becomes functional. And I will say, I won't lie, there's a quality of loneliness on retreat. There's a quality of loneliness to meditating. That's why a lot of people don't want to meditate, because you touch the beautiful, tender heart that we've each in our own ways covered up with whatever our habits are. Anger, aggression, laziness, ignorance, all of those. And then when you start to meditate, there's a little bit of like the breath like aspirates and slowly breaks through that false sense of strength. And actually you touch your strength, which is vulnerability. So retreat is like doing that times 1,000 or times whatever. So if you're going to do an at-home retreat, you might do it like your partner goes to work, you retreat for the time that they're at work, and then you come out and have dinner together. But you're not like ignoring your responsibilities, you know? Like I don't not walk my dogs. I use that as an opportunity to practice, to notice the beautiful park I live next to, Prospect Park. So to just, revel in that without, you know, the chit-chat that happens with friends. So there is a sense of commitment, but it's not like heavy-handed or conceptual. It's totally experiential, as you know. Everything I thought about meditation changed when I actually began to experience it, which is really, really nice. It's nice to not be right about things and for them to actually be fresh and lively.
Well, all right. Thank you, Shante. That was great. Again, if you want to experience a meditation retreat, the Shambhala Meditation Center of New York is putting one on the week of February 2nd. Go to ny.shambhala.org and click the link on the homepage for more information and to register. Our weekly Dharma gathering, from which these talks are drawn, happens every Tuesday night at the Shambhala Center. If you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. But if you are in the New York City area, come say hi. Come visit us. You can hear these talks live and in person and meet a great community of fellow meditators or meditation toe dippers. Thanks for listening. Later.